This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Family. First, however, our bulletin of church news. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis has returned to the Vatican after his pastoral visit to the Italian city of Venice earlier on Sunday. On the Pope's schedule was a visit to a female prison, followed by a meeting with artists and young people before presiding at Holy Mass at St. Mark's Square in Venice. The Holy Father was flown by helicopter directly into the Giudecca Women's Prison, where the Holy See's pavilion at the Venice Art Biennale is hosted. After greeting and listening to the inmates, he told them he very much wanted to meet them right at the start of his visit to tell them they hold a special place in his heart. The Holy Father went on to urge the inmates to use their time in prison as a chance for moral and material rebirth. Thaddeus Jones has this report.
On this, his first stop in Venice, the Pope met with over 80 of the inmates, as well as the prison staff, security, and volunteers. He took the time to meet each one by one before he gave a brief address and listened attentively to groups of them as they expressed their gratitude for his visit and hopes for a better life and world for all. In his address, Pope Francis explained how he made this visit with them the first event, wishing to assure them that they hold a special place in his heart. He explained how this is a special encounter to be together, and thanks be to God, we can give each other time, prayer, closeness, and fraternal affection, allowing for precious mutual enrichment. He added that God knows each one of us here today, and we all have something unique to give and receive that benefits each one of us. The Pope said it's the Lord who brings us together, and while the paths from which we have come vary, some are very painful, also due to mistakes that have led to wounds and scars each carries within. He acknowledged the harsh reality of prison, also due to overcrowding and the lack of facilities and resources, and incidents of violence that add to their suffering. At the same time, he noted that prison can also offer time for a moral and material rebirth where the dignity of women and men is not left in isolation, but promoted through mutual respect and the nurturing of talents and abilities that there are in each person. And although these talents may be dormant or isolated by life's challenges, they can reemerge for the good of all, he said, with due attention and faith. He added that no one can take away a person's dignity. No one.
Non isolare la dignità, ma dare
Pope underscored how important it is, again, for prison systems to offer possibilities for human, spiritual, cultural, and professional growth that favor healthy reintegration in society, offering new possibilities that benefit everyone. In thanking those present before leaving, the Pope gave the inmates an icon of the Blessed Mother and Child, explaining how in it you can see the Mother's tenderness and this tenderness Mary has with all of us. She is the Mother of Tenderness.
Papa Francesco, siamo arrivati al tanto atteso giorno del tuo arrivo.
Then groups of inmates came up to greet the Pope, offering words of gratitude for his visit and hopes for a better future and world, and they gave the Pope fruits of their efforts in working in the prison-run cooperatives that produce a variety of products ranging from soaps, clothing, and flowers. Thaddeus Jones.
Shortly after his encounter with the inmates, the Pope met with a group of artists in the chapel of the women's prison. In his address, he invited the artist and everyone to imagine a world where no human being is considered a stranger. He urged them to embrace the theme of this year's Biennale, which is Strangers Everywhere, and to show solidarity with all those on the margins of society. Lisa Zengarini has that report.
Il mondo ha bisogno di artisti.
The world needs artists. This was the message Pope Francis imparted on Sunday as he met with a group of artists, marking the second event of his one-day pastoral visit to Venice. Addressing the group in the chapel of the Giudecca's women's prison, the Pope praised artists as true visionaries who can see beyond the boundaries of our world, making everyone feel at home.
L'arte riveste lo statuto di città rifugio.
Art, he said, has the status of a city of refuge that disobeys the rule of violence and discrimination in order to create forms of human belonging, recalling that the Old Testament established the cities of refuge to offer offenders asylum and protection from revenge. Pope Francis therefore invited the artists to imagine cities where no human being is considered a stranger. The Pope then delved into the title chosen for the Holy See's pavilion, With My Eyes. We all need to be gazed at, and to dare to gaze at ourselves, he said, and Jesus teaches us to do so. He gazes at everyone with the intensity of a love that does not judge but knows how to be close. Art too, the Pope noted, educates us to this perspective. It is not possessive nor objectifying. It educates us to a contemplative gaze. Bringing his address to a close, Pope Francis expressed his hope that contemporary art may also help us value the contribution of women to humanity.
Ci sono una gioia e una sofferenza che si uniscono nel femminile in una forma unica.
There are joys and sufferings that unite in femininity in a unique form, he said, citing amongst others famous female artists such as Frida Kahlo, Sister Mary Corita Kent and Louise Bourgeois. I am Lisa Zengarini.
After that encounter with the artist, the Pope went on to meet with some 1,500 young people in front of the Basilica of St. Mary of Good Health. In his address, he called on the young people of the dioceses of the region to make themselves a gift for other people by focusing on how they can help someone else instead of complaining about being alone or misunderstood. Devin Watkins reports.
Pope Francis met on Sunday morning with young people in Venice in front of the Basilica of St. Mary of Good Health. Speaking to young people, the Pope recalled that we have all received the great gift of being God's beloved children and are therefore called to share his joy with others. He reflected on two verbs that characterize the Blessed Virgin Mary's action as soon as she heard that she would become the Mother of God. She arose and went. Arise, said Pope Francis to young people in Venice, arise from sadness to lift your gaze upward.
Alzarsi per stare in piedi di fronte alla vita, non seduti sul divano.
Rise to stand in front of life, not to sit on the couch. He recognized that young people must fight an oppressive inertia that turns our world into shades of gray. Rather than living on quick emotions and momentary satisfaction, Christians are called to persevere together in faith and love by praying in community at Mass, for example.
Tu potresti dire, ma attorno a me stanno tutti per conto loro con il cellulare.
You might say, but all around me, everyone is on their own with their cell phone glued to social media and video games, said Pope Francis. Yet you must fearlessly go against the current. Take life into your hands. Get involved. Turn off the TV and open the gospel. Get off your cell phone and encounter people. The Pope then invited young people gathered in Venice to embrace God's call to participate in his creation. In conclusion, Pope Francis urged young people to create a simple prayer from the heart and offer a gesture of love to someone who cannot reciprocate.
Alzati, apri il cuore a Dio.
Open your heart to God, thank him, and embrace the beauty that you are, he concluded. Then go. Go out and walk together with others and paint the streets of life with the gospel. And he asked the young people to repeat with him.
Non ho sentito, sai?
Alzati,
mi piace.
Arise and go. I'm Devin Watkins.
Shortly after that encounter with young people, Pope Francis presided at Holy Mass in St. Mark's Square in Venice. In his homily during the Mass, attended by some 10,500 faithful, the Pope issued a call for encounter, inclusion and care for our common home. Sister Francine Marie Cooper reports.
Wrapping up his half-day visit to Venice, Pope Francis presided over Mass in the city's magnificent St. Mark's Square, recalling the theme of the visit, remaining united in the love of Christ.
Rimanete in me e io in voi.
Only by remaining united in Christ, he said, we can bring the fruits of the gospel into the reality we inhabit. fruits of justice and peace, fruits of solidarity and mutual care, carefully made choices to preserve our environmental and human heritage. We need our Christian communities, neighborhoods and cities, he added, to become welcoming, inclusive and hospitable places. And taking his cue from the Gospel of John, the Pope invoked the imagery of Jesus as the vine and believers as its branches, and reminded Christians never to sever their connection with the Lord. Just as a vineyard requires diligent care to yield good fruit, so too do our lives flourish when nourished by the sap of God's love, he explained.
Il legame con Gesù ci apre ad accogliere la linfa dell'amore di Dio.
Remaining united to Christ means to grow in relationship with him, to converse with him, to embrace his word, to follow him on the path of the kingdom of God. It calls us, he said, to continual growth, engagement and action. To remain in the Lord is to embark on a journey of discipleship, where we embrace his teachings, embody his love, and bear fruits of justice, peace and solidarity in our communities. And against the backdrop of Venice's unique beauty, the Pope issued an urgent call to action, highlighting the many challenges facing the city, from climate change and environmental degradation to social fragmentation and cultural erosion. He called for carefully made choices to preserve our environmental and human heritage.
Venezia è un tutt'uno con le acque su cui sorge.
Venice is one with the waters upon which it sits, he said. Without the care and safeguarding of this natural environment, it might even cease to exist. Similarly, our life is also immersed forever in the springs of God's love. Venice, which has always been a place of encounter and cultural exchange, is called to be a sign of beauty available to all, starting with the last, a sign of fraternity and care for our common home. I'm Sister Francie Marie Cooper.
Recent floods caused by heavy rain in Tanzania have claimed at least 150 lives and affected more than 200,000 others. In response to the disaster, the Catholic Church, through the Caritas Office of the Tanzania Episcopal Conference, along with Caritas Dar es Salaam Archdiocese, have donated some items to the flood victims in several villages in the coastal district of Kibiti. On Thursday, the country's Prime Minister, Kassim Majaliwa, gave a report to Parliament on the floods and warned that the rains might continue into May. He urged families to leave flood-prone areas, as we hear in this report by Francesca Mertlo.
With the death toll reaching at least 155 and fears of continued rainfall into May, Tanzanian Prime Minister has urged residents in flood-prone areas to evacuate for safety. The situation is dire, with over 200,000 individuals and 51,000 households already affected by the deluge. In neighbouring Kenya and Burundi, similar catastrophes are unfolding, making the humanitarian crisis a regional one. Presenting a report to Tanzania's parliament, Prime Minister Majaliwa highlighted the extensive toll since January. In addition to the lives lost, 236 people have been injured, with widespread destruction of property, crops and critical infrastructure like roads and bridges. The devastation is also recounted by the residents suffering the rainfall. In Tanzania's northern Siha district, people have been left completely homeless and all their belongings have been wiped away by the rain. I'm Francesca Merlo.
UN Security Council members on Saturday called on warring parties in Sudan to immediately halt the military build-up and take steps to de-escalate the situation in El Fasher, the provincial capital of North Darfur State. The call came amid reports of an imminent offensive by the Rapid Support Forces and their allied militia against the city. Before the call by the UN Security Council, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights warned that escalating violence in North Darfur State has left dozens dead and that many others are trapped in El Fasher City. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now our feature, family. Church in Africa as a family of God. Its people, challenges, values, and hopes.
My name is Father Paul Samasumo with your program, Family. some of you have asked to listen once more to a discussion that I had with Father Joel Nkongolo. Father Joel Nkongolo is a Claretian priest. He is originally from the DRC, but is currently working and is based in Nigeria. Father Nkongolo is an IT expert and someone who knows all about artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence, AI, is rapidly becoming a powerful tool across the world. It is a tool that has the potential to transform economies and how the world's financial sector operates. Artificial intelligence also has the potential, for example, to improve healthcare services. However, already there are concerns and worries about the power of AI. To refresh your minds, ethics is concerned with principles of what is right and wrong conduct, while policy matters have to do with setting rules and regulations that will govern the usage of artificial intelligence, in this case in our countries or in Africa. Both ethics and policy matters will be important in ensuring that AI technologies are deployed on the African continent in ways that are fair, transparent, and accountable. Father Joe, welcome. Now, to many of us, this all sounds very complicated and sophisticated. What exactly is artificial intelligence?
All right, Father Paul. Artificial intelligence, we can say, encompasses a wide range of technology and techniques that enables machines to mimic human cognitive functions. Machine learning, a subset of AI, allows systems to learn from data without being explicitly programmed. For example, recommendation algorithm used by streaming platforms like Netflix can analyze users' viewing history to suggest relevant content. Computer vision technology, another aspect of AI, powers facial recognition systems used in security and authentication applications. I think this could explain a little bit what is artificial intelligence.
Should we be worried and afraid of artificial intelligence?
Well, while AI offers numerous benefits such as improved efficiency, productivity, and innovation, it also raises legitimate concerns. One concern is job displacement, as automation could replace certain tasks traditionally performed by humans. For instance, a study by the McKinsey Global Institute suggests that up to 800 million jobs could be automated by 2030. Additionally, there are ethical concerns surrounding AI, such as algorithmic bias, which can perpetuate discrimination and inequality. For example, facial recognition systems have been found to exhibit higher error rates for people with darker skin tones, leading to unfair treatment in areas like law enforcement.
We know that Africa's journey towards embracing artificial intelligence seems rather slow. Is this a good or a bad thing?
Compared to other regions, Africa's adoption of AI has been relatively slow, attributed to factors such as limited infrastructures, digital literacy, and funding. However, this cautious approach can also be viewed as an opportunity to address underlying challenges and prioritize ethical considerations. For example, Ghana recently established 2 AI centers to develop AI capabilities while ensuring ethical AI deployment. By taking a deliberate approach, African countries can tailor an AI solution to address local needs and minimize potential negative impacts.
How would you see artificial intelligence affecting or impacting the church in Africa? Should the church in Africa be worried about the rise and rise of artificial intelligence?
Yes, AI can enhance various aspects of church operations, such as automating administrative tasks, analyzing congregation demographics for targeted outreach, and providing personalized spiritual guidance through chatbots. However, there are ethical considerations such as ensuring data privacy and maintaining human connection amid technological advancements. For example, the Church of England utilizes AI-powered chatbots to engage with congregants online, offering pastoral support and prayer. While AI can augment the church's outreach efforts, it's essential to maintain human oversight and uphold ethical standards in its issue.
Father Joe, in Africa, we're still struggling with distinguishing credible news from fake news. Maybe not only in Africa. And then there is social media, which is now seen as a hostile environment, and there is the polarization that comes with it. What can the church do to influence ethical behavior and good social media conduct?
I think, Father Paul, the church can leverage its moral authority to promote ethical behavior and responsible social media use. For instance, Pope Francis has spoken out against the spread of fake news and polarization of social media, emphasizing the importance of truth and dialogue. Additionally, you can add other initiatives like digital Catholicism. This initiative involves leveraging online media technologies as tools for evangelization while simultaneously spreading the message of faith in cyberspace itself. So, by modeling ethical behavior and offering guidance on digital citizenship, the church can foster a culture of respect, empathy, and truthfulness in online interactions.
Already Africa's young are glued, for example, to the app TikTok. How can parents, guardians, teachers, maybe priests or pastors ensure that our young people do not become enslaved to these technologies or apps?
I believe that adults play a crucial role in guiding young people's use of technology and promoting healthy digital habits. For example, parents and teachers can educate children about the risks of excessive screen time and the importance of balance in their online and offline activities. It is very, very important. They can also set limits on device usage, encourage also outdoor play. Children should play outside and foster face-to-face social interactions. Moreover, religious leaders can incorporate teachings on mindfulness, self-discipline, and responsible stewardship of technology into their spiritual guidance, helping young people to cultivate a healthy relationship with digital media.
Some observers say that in spite of its promising potential, artificial intelligence, AI, actually presents potential for abuse by, say, some non-democratic governments. With AI, authoritarian regimes have this tool which has great capacity for digital surveillance, monitoring of citizens, and even malicious software. Is there anything that can be done by individuals or society to protect themselves in such cases?
Yes, individuals and civil society organizations can take proactive measures to safeguard against AI abuse by authoritarian regimes. For example, they can advocate for legislation and regulations that protect digital rights, privacy, and freedom of expression. Tools like virtual private networks, VPNs, and encrypted messaging apps like Telegram can help individuals circumvent government surveillance and censorship. Moreover, international collaboration and solidarity among democratic nations can amplify efforts to hold oppressive regimes accountable for AI misuse and human rights violations.
Education and awareness are key to the advent of AI. What would you be saying? What would be your advice to those who work in education or in schools? What needs to be taught in order to ensure that young people or even the general public are prepared for the potential benefits as well as the risks of AI.
Educators have a vital role in preparing students for AI-driven future by fostering critical thinking, creativity, and ethical decision-making skills. For example, integrating AI literacy into the curriculum can help students understand how AI works, its societal impacts, and ethical considerations. Projects like Google's AI for Social Good initiative provide educational resources and tools for teaching AI concepts in schools. By empowering students to become responsible AI users and innovators, educators can equip them to navigate the opportunities and challenges of the digital age effectively. Father Paul Samasumo, these examples, comparisons, and statistics illustrate the multifaceted nature of AI and its implication for society, including the church and education. I hope they provide a comprehensive perspective on these complex issues. Thank you.
Father Joel Nkongolo, thank you very much for your time. Please do not get tired of us. We will come back again knocking on your door. Father Joel Nkongolo, Claretian priest, Congolese priest working in Nigeria.
You have been listening to Family with Father Paul Samasumo.
You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.